No one has benefited more from a thriving economy than women, who have filled 58% of the newly created jobs last year. Thank you very much.
Hello, and welcome to a special post-State of the Union edition of the Reason podcast. Today, it is Peter Suderman and Catherine Mangy Ward weighing in with zero preparation and lots of rage. Peter, are you ready?
Totally.
All right. First, let's
That's the recipe for a great podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about the best thing. What was the best thing in the State of the Union, which we just finished listening to?
I thought the best thing in the State of the Union was the combination of Trump's remarks on socialism with the C-SPAN video operator's choice of subject, obviously Bernie Sanders. And the camera
it was
just
real close.
Kept zooming closer and closer into his face until you felt like maybe you could reach out and touch one of his old man socialist sweat pores. And actually, you know what? They're yours. They're yours because those are the people's sweat pores. No, seriously, it was actually a great, nice little passage about, you know, where Trump said, basically, we think that the Democratic parties, he didn't say Democratic parties, but it was obvious what he was implying. We think the Democratic parties move to embrace socialism as a good thing is very bad because when you look globally and historically at what socialism has wrought, it is awful. Trump's right.
And we got the secondary commentary from C-SPAN being like, look at this red old man face. This is the face of socialism. So I guess they were endorsing Trump in that. I thought the best part, obviously, was rockets. There was some rockets in there. I love rockets, as regular Reason podcast listeners will know. We got an obligatory Buzz Aldrin cameo, and then the line, this year American astronauts will go back to space on American rockets, which is true. And, of course, I do not particularly care on some level whether rockets are American or not. But for the last, I guess, since 2011, when the space shuttle was retired, we have been sending our astronauts up to the International Space Station using Russian
undocumented rockets.
Undocumented Russian rockets, which, you know, I don't know about y'all, but I don't feel super great about, like, using actual hardware that actually, like, personally belongs to Putin. So, and I'm not sure how great he feels about that. Meanwhile, in the U.S., the Commercial Crew program actually is a huge success of privatization. And I think, unlike basically every other time when people say really soon this private space thing is going to work, it really is true that probably this year Commercial Crew will go on a crewed mission to the ISS. So that's pretty big news, and it's good.
Yay, rockets.
Yay, rockets. Boo, socialism. That's basically just the Reason tagline. Let's be real. We're done.
Certainly under your editorship.
Yeah. So this speech was about national greatness. It was about American greatness. It was about how we don't need to be Republicans or Democrats. We just need to be full of American greatness.
You could say it was about how we should make America great again.
Should we, though? Should we?
So I think that in some ways this was, I don't know, maybe not the most coherent, but the richest call for American greatness that I think I have ever heard from President Trump since the beginning of his campaign.
Can I read out just real quick the relevant passage? I don't know if this is the sentence you're thinking of exactly, but it was truly some masterful, like, writing 101 work here. We must choose between greatness or gridlock, results or resistance, vision or vengeance, incredible progress or pointless destruction.
We must choose between asininity.
Assonance? have gone with that.
As Barack Obama would say, false choice.
False choice. Tonight, I ask you to choose greatness. Did you choose greatness tonight, Peter?
I choose greatness every night. thank you very much for letting me let the world know there. No, I mean, I think that there was a little bit of Tucker Carlson's monologue, maybe more than a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit of Tucker Carlson's monologue here in this speech. This was a nostalgic kind of gauzy call to, you know, remember America's greatest hits. And that's why the last third of the speech dwelled pretty heavily on World War II and America's success in winning a great world war. But there's the kind of dissonance when you compare it with the actual policy substance, where Trump, you know, he talked about right to try and criminal justice reform, which are good policies that Trump deserves real credit for. But he also talked a lot about trade and immigration, and basically how we should close America off to the world. And those are ideas. Forget policies. Those are ideas that make America smaller.
And he talked about people's dreams who were shattered by NAFTA. I thought that was an interesting turn of phrase there. I mean,
that's a weird insight, like a Jungian insight into Trump's dream life, I think.
dreamscape of like ruptured, jagged edged.
Yeah, like, do you think of the, like, he's in
the... What was
the
thing that we were scared of? The North American Superhighway? The Superhighway to Canada? What was it called?
It was the NAFTA Superhighway.
The NAFTA Superhighway.
And they were just going to drive the Mexican trucks all the way through, and it was this total crazy right-wing propaganda thing, you know, basically a bizarre argument for closed borders that had no basis in fact, which is... you know, what our president makes on a regular basis.
Except for actually what we replaced NAFTA with was basically NAFTA.
Yes.
So.
He negotiates the best deals. NAFTA was terrible. And now we don't have NAFTA. We have Trump's NAFTA.
Cool, cool. We also had some pretty good uterus stuff in this speech. I enjoyed all the lady stuff.
I am curious to hear your take on many of these things. As someone without a uterus,
yeah.
If you could perhaps enlighten me, Trump talked about the ladies. You're a lady.
I am.
And I noticed
for Matt Walsh right now.
You're
Catherine. You're a woman.
Not really. But you're not wearing white tonight. Explain your decision. Defend yourself.
It's probably because I don't think women should have the vote. I think that's what's happening here. Right. So a lot of the newly elected representatives showed up wearing white. It was actually quite striking. They were all sitting in the on the House floor, just, you know, kind of looking like a block, which was you know, sort of sent a message.
You're saying that women lose their individual identity based on their choice of clothing?
Yeah, I think I did just say that. So we'll all have to grapple with that later. But I actually thought one of the best moments was when he said, you know, women are doing really well in the workforce and, you know, a lot, you know, new jobs are occupied by women.
No one has benefited more from our thriving economy than women, who have filled 58% of the new jobs created last year. This is, again, to bring Tucker Carlson back into this discussion where he was not wanted, but we're gonna bring him in anyway. Like Tucker Carlson's argument is a big part of it boils down to women are taking jobs held by men
that should be held by men,
that had previously been held by men.
Yeah, and then all the women started applauding, and he kind of paused and said, "You weren't supposed to do that." But it seems clear on some level they were supposed to do that. I mean, it was kind of a sop. I am old enough to remember when. You know, women in the workforce was not a Republican applause line. And I guess for many Republicans, it still isn't. I am also old enough to remember when paid family leave wasn't a Republican applause line. But It sure was tonight. Again, I felt like there was a weird discomfort in the room when he said, we will, you know, make it possible for women to stay home with their newborns. And like, clearly, if those precise words had come out of the mouth of Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, it would have been a sustained standing ovation from every Democrat in the room. And instead, there was this kind of...
And Republicans would have sat there with little frowny faces and their arms crossed, like my arms are crossed right now.
And instead, it was this sort of fitful half-start applause, and then it kind of found...
Of them knew what to do with this, which is a kind of interesting kind of side, you know, like a little footnote in the Trump presidency, and even in the, specifically in the Trump State of the Union, is that Trump makes both parties somewhat uncomfortable by kind of scrambling, not always necessarily in good ways, ideological predispositions. Do you think that Trump is going to leave a lasting impact on the Republican Party on this particular issue?
Yeah, I think it is very likely that as nearly all of his predecessors have done, Trump will leave a massive new entitlement in place when he leaves office, and that that entitlement will be paid leave.
So the hip new way to do paid leave is to not make it a massive new entitlement, but instead to cut it, to chunk it out of an existing massive entitlement by letting people basically take Social Security money early. And that's the Republican way of doing
it. We have plenty of Social Security money, and that's, you know,
it's totally real money.
It's real.
It's not Monopoly.
Mm-mm.
The trust fund exists, and every time we put a dollar in it, that's a real dollar that exists somewhere.
So obviously that's total garbage, and that money is not real. It is IOUs that the government writes to itself, and even then, that's frankly an overgenerous rendition of how that accounting works. So it is, in fact, a new entitlement that will have to be funded functionally out of general funds. And once it is in place, even if it is written in a way, as I suspect it will be, when written by Republicans, that it will be a relatively modest, limited entitlement. Once it exists, it can only grow, not unlike fetuses. Do you like that segue? There was a big abortion section. It was, I thought, interestingly religious in tone. It was very highfalutin in its presentation, which is not something that I feel like I had heard from Trump before on this issue. And then there was this incredible pivot that I want to talk about, where he says, let's work together to build a culture that cherishes human life. Let us reaffirm a fundamental truth. All children, born and unborn, are made in the holy image of God. The final part of my agenda is to protect America's national security. Here is a bunch of figures about military spending. Which, on one way of thinking about the world, is a coherent transition. And in another way of thinking about the world, is literally like, here's the money we're using to buy drones to bomb countries where we will kill children.
Hey, you're an editor. You know when you're writing a really long thing that covers a bunch of territory, transitions are hard.
All right.
Like, you've got the social conservative team that's like, let's do Ralph Northam, the abortion section. This governor gave us a news hook, basically. Mm-hmm. Let's also, we got to talk about the drones. We love those too. We love babies. And we love the drones that kill the babies.
And to be clear, I love babies and I love drones, too.
You don't like the government drones that kill the babies.
Not the, like, unsanctioned death from the sky ones. And also, you know, not always the, like, not all the babies either. But still, like, in theory, there is a segue there. I personally do not think Trump nailed that one in the execution.
I mean, it's... That might be as much Trump's speechwriter's fault as his, as much as I would like to blame our president for certain of these things. Like, you know, these are hard things to crack. So you like the babies.
I like the babies.
Which perhaps should bring us to our final note.
What's the final note?
Well, so on the Reason Editors podcast, Not long ago, you said that your favorite part of the State of the Union was the guests that people bring. And so AOC brought one of the women who stopped Jeff Flake in the elevator during the Kavanaugh hearings. There were all of these guests, the veterans, et cetera. And there was a child with cancer. So
the minute I saw that kid with short hair sitting next to the first lady, I was like, uh-oh, it's a cancer kid.
But you're for cancer kids, right? We want them to live. We want them to not have cancer.
We do.
That's great. Yeah.
So I do like the guests. Obviously, I always like me a little Buzz Aldrin. I could have done with maybe like a couple fewer World War II vets, but I get it. They're like pretty scarce.
Like, honestly, we're not going to have them around for that much longer. Mm-hmm. I think now is the time to feature them. I'm like, 1990.
Yeah,
we're
they're thick
fine
on the ground.
Yes, we should obviously pay tribute to them as a nation, but like now, this is the time. And as I said at the beginning of the podcast, I thought this was the richest expression of Trump's American greatness philosophy. Again, not the most detailed, not the most coherent or cogent necessarily. To alliterate a little bit. But like the World War II stuff was like, that's who America was, is, and could be. And that's much more legitimate than Trump's like, America, we need to make America great by building a dumb border wall that won't work to keep out criminals and sex traffickers that don't exist.
And there was actually astonishingly little wall talk relative to the volume of the speech, which I certainly would have anticipated. Of course, the very best guess was Alice Johnson, who, was used as a stand-in to talk about criminal justice reform and, in particular, the First Step Act, but also Trump's, I think, expressed interest and willingness to follow that. That pardon or with others. And, credit where credit is due. I was delighted that he used as much of the speech as he did for that purpose. He could have glossed over it. If in the end, one of the signature accomplishments of the Trump administration is criminal justice reform.
It is.
Great.
It's not just so far.
It certainly is.
He basically has two.
With North Korea, it won't be like it will be a loss.
So far, he has two big bills. He has the tax overhaul, and he has the criminal justice reform bill. My favorite part of his description there was that he was introduced to Alice Johnson through, I believe he said, a friend,
Kim Kardashian.
It makes a subtweeted appearance in the State of the Union. Thank you, Donald Trump.
Honestly, it was pretty restrained for Donald Trump, wasn't it, to just refer to Kim Kardashian as a friend?
He played it cool.
He could have gone all in on that. He could have name dropped, and he didn't.
I didn't love the speech. I am quite frustrated by Donald Trump's signature initiatives with regards to trade and immigration, as well as with how he typically conducts himself in public. I did not hate this speech. I cannot say that I loved it or even that I liked it, but I can say that I am surprised that I did not hate it.
Yeah. Well, that was the best case scenario for this speech from you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a huge upside relative to expectations.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the wake of the death of the Weekly Standard, I've been thinking a lot about national greatness. And there is a weird way in which this speech is like a kind of digested, transmogrified, like Fukuyama-fied version of a thing that the founding and senior editors of the Weekly Standard championed for much of that magazine's history. And I think that's, it's sort of worth thinking about how that particular snake wound up eating its own tail, to mix a metaphor.
Right. So the president who has, let's, best exemplified is not right, but in some ways taken the ball furthest with the Bill Kristol American greatness philosophy, is the president that Bill Kristol is most opposed to in,
and who
certainly
is most opposed
in the
to
last
Kristol.
40 years. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And also that this would currently be manifesting itself in, let's talk a lot about World War II and how it shaped America and facilitated the achievement of greatness, including a big chunk at the end about a Holocaust survivor who was also a survivor of the shooting at the Tree of Life synagogue. But our current wars are not good.
Which is true. Which is which totally is true. Which is the most libertarian, like, the criminal justice stuff. And I mean, like,
there's some good stuff, but
among
the
most sort of friendly to libertarian ideas is what you're about to say.
To say the sentence, great nations do not fight endless wars. Like, that's a good sentence.
Fact check, true. And,
I mean,
like, again,
sometimes they try.
Right. That's also true. Again, I do not like Donald Trump, but I am pleased to hear that in a State of the Union. You brought up Fukuyama and this speech, as I noted prior to our podcast, really reminded me of an interview that our colleague Nick Gillespie did with Francis Fukuyama not too long ago, in which Fukuyama argued, and I'm not sure I agree with this, but he argued that one of the reasons that trust in government was so high in the middle of the 20th century was because America had just come out of a kind of a wave of doing a bunch of great things, surviving the Depression, and in particular, winning World War II and defeating a great national evil in the form of the Nazis and the Axis powers and et cetera. Again, I'm not sure I totally agree with Fukuyama's, well, people love government because when it actually does big, awesome things. And he also talked about like big infrastructure projects like the Hoover Dam, that sort of thing. And he was kind of implying that maybe we need to think about doing that again. But I think Trump's speech tonight was in many ways an effort to try to capture that, to bottle it and resell it to the America of 2019.
With a gold label on it.
The gold label, totally beautiful. It says Trump. It's Trump bottled America greatness. What's really in it, though, is like bad trade policies.
Well, yeah, right. So the thing that worries me is that right now what's in it is bad trade policies and paid family leave, but ultimately, is it not true that the way that you get this type of sense of greatness and mission is that, in fact, you need a great enemy? And if you do, and that great enemy is perhaps, as was implied in this speech, illegal immigrants and or nations who want to sell us stuff at low prices, that will ultimately be not great.
That is, in some ways, the argument of Alan Moore's seminal superhero deconstruction comic, Watchmen.
All right. I think we've done it. We've just been our best selves here tonight. This was the Reason Podcast, State of the Union edition. I am your quasi-host, Catherine Mangy Ward, here with my other quasi-host, Peter Suderman. We are very sorry. Good night.
Not sorry.